Today is March 7th, 2014. This is Fidencio Marbella with the Westchester Public Library in Westchester, Illinois. Also present is Ryan Flores, reference librarian here at Westchester. Today we will be speaking with Mr. Stanley Hiranzi. Stan was born in Cicero, Illinois on January 21st, 1924. And he served in the United States Marine Corps from 1941 through 46. Some of the campaigns he participated in included Guadalcanal, Guam, and Iwo Jima. This interview is being conducted for the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Stan, why don't you tell us a little bit about growing up in Cicero and a little bit about your family?
There was seven of us in the family, you know, in Cicero. My parents come here in 1914 from Poland. And we had the only wooden sidewalk in Cicero, and he was a cement contractor. So anyway, I went to Columbus School, graduated from the grade school, and then I went into high school at Morton High School. And I graduated from there. And I went and I worked, a little bit at my age. You know, I was still young, but I still worked a little bit. And then the war hadn't started yet, and I wanted to join the Polish Army. My mom says, no way you're going to join the Polish Army. So anyway, I joined April of 1940, before the war. I enlisted in the Marine Corps downtown in Chicago, and Salome Zuniga was a good friend of mine. We went through boot camp and everything, but anyway, I joined the Marine Corps in the old post office downtown, and I never talk about it.
Okay, if you want to skip it, that's
so
fine.
Anyway, they sent me to South Carolina, or North Carolina, to the Marine Corps base over there. Okay. And
was that Camp Lejeune?
No, not Camp Lejeune.
Was something different.
What was it on? I'll get to
that's
it.
That's all right.
Anyway, we got off the train, we had the old choo-choo train. They took us down to North Carolina, we went through boot camp there, and that was a rough deal because these DIs, drill instructors, they wanted everything done right. So they really got after a few guys. They didn't get me because I was a big guy by then, you know. So anyway, I wanted to be a policeman, and that's what I put down on my contract with the Marine Corps, because my uncle was chief of police in Cicero. So what did they do? They sent me to Great Lakes, and I took prisoners from there one at a time in handcuffs to Norfolk, Virginia, the air base, the Navy base. And we used to go with the old, coal-driven trains and all that. It was a rough deal, but I really didn't want to do that because each one of those kids I took was my age, you know, and I felt sorry for them. But I had to be handcuffed except when they wanted to go to the washroom and or if they got sick. So then they sent me to the 3rd Marine Division, A Company, 1st Battalion, 9th, and I got transferred to them. And then they sent us to California, and we were in these big tents and everything, and we got on the USS Rochambeau to go to the South Pacific. And while we were going across, they said, hey, anybody can box, you know? And here they had a young guy, a Navy guy, and he was the guy that's in the box, whoever entered the ring. Well, I did. I lasted about 2 minutes. That was it.
Had you ever boxed before?
No, I never did, but I figured I might as well do it. So anyway, we went across zigzagging with destroyers on each side of us. You know, we weren't the only ship with troops. There were several.
Okay.
So anyway, we got ready for combat, and I was a Browning automatic rifleman. I don't know, you ever hear of that one?
Yes.
Yeah, I was a barman.
Wow.
See?
Those are heavy.
Oh, yeah, and yeah. So we got to going, and we got attached to the 1st Marine Division for just 2 days, and we went in on Guadalcanal. So that's where I met the chief of police, his dad. I met him, but at that time we didn't know it. He was married or anything, because he was a young guy like me. So we shot the breeze and all that, and he identified himself, and I introduced myself. So then we suddenly they took us back on our ship, and we got ready for Guam. So the 3rd Marine Division went in at Agana. That's one little town. We come in there, and boy, there's big rocks everywhere, and we had to run in from the landing ship and run through that. So we did take the island of Guam from the Japanese, and we were going into the boondocks, which is the forest there, looking for them too, trying to get them, because there's a lot of them that ran into the forest to get away from us. So then we did a lot of work trying to, you know, exercise and all that stuff, and we got ready for, that's after we took Guam. We started getting ready, and we didn't know where we were going to go. And lo and behold, we got on the, one of the President Adams ships there. Known, they have about three or four of those named after presidents. So we got to this island, which we still weren't told what it was. So finally, they told us it was Iwo Jima. And the reason we're coming here to take Iwo Jima is our B-29s are falling into the ocean after they bomb, you know, they run out of gas and all that, or they have problems with the plane. So everybody had a double pack on, their helmets, and as you know, a Browning automatic's a big weapon. So here, I looked there, and I was going to go down the ladder, the rope ladder, and my wife knows about this, and I decided to jump. I jumped at the wrong time because the landing craft was coming up and the ship was going down. And I thought I broke my legs, but I didn't. So then we got in a landing craft and went in to fight the Japanese with the 4th and 5th Marine Divisions who had already landed there. So it was a rough deal. In fact, I've got a picture of me with all the guys, right, Mom? On the landing beach, because we got left off and we jumped in that sand and everything. And there was a big bluff that was above us, so we were pretty safe. So anyway, when we finally got up on top and the guys were getting shot left and right, we got over to two cannons that were firing at Mount Suribachi, which is the mountain there. And when they were firing and all that, we were getting their empty shells and trying to make a hole. And we were using these empty shells to keep the sand from coming in. All of a sudden, somebody says, hey, there's the flag. The first flag. The first flag, the guy from
North Riverside
was the guy who was holding the carbine like this. You've seen that picture?
Yes, yes.
Okay, that was the first flag. Nobody saw that second flag go up. Because they were up on top of that damn mountain and hidden from view. But it looked good in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
So anyway, who was that Indian? Ira Hayes.
Oh, Ira, yes.
I got a song by Johnny Cash about it, Ira Hayes. Oh, is that a good one? So anyway, Ira Hayes, you know, he didn't want to be a hero or anything like that. And he, all of a sudden, he's in Chicago getting drunker than a skunk. And I met a policeman that, who had retired that knew him, and he said he was a gentle guy, but he had a bad habit of getting drunk. So anyway, when the I had signed up for 6 years, and I didn't know that when I was a kid, you know. So I got out in April of 46. So anyway, I come home and I got my uniform on and walking down the street. Nobody paid attention. Nobody. Honest to God. And Salome Zuniga. He was a wonderful man. You met him, Mom. 6 months after he come home from going through three battles, he was in his brother-in-law's pickup truck. No seatbelts. They got in an accident. He got thrown out and killed. And Salome was my best friend.
So he survived battles in the Pacific only to die in a car accident.
Where did you hear about that first flag raising?
I've seen photographs of it, and how there's always this this story about how the main flag raising, people seem to think that that was the only one.
Yeah.
People always forget about the first one.
Yeah, the first one was the one that I saw.
Yeah, it's a very distinctive picture of the man in front holding the carbine.
Yeah.
He's dead. To protect the soldiers. Okay.
I asked his daughter what happened to him, and she said he drank too much.
Yeah. I didn't know he was from around here.
No, yeah, he's from Riverside, North Riverside.
Oh, that's
okay.
Yeah, his daughter saw standing talk somewhere, and so she saw. So she called us up and invited us over to their house, and they had a beautiful cake with the mother and the daughter.
We went in on the USS Iwo Jima. We were asked to come over there, but.
The maiden voyage.
Yeah, it was the maiden voyage, and in the letter the government put down, if you can't walk up the ramp, don't come. So we went to what town?
Louisiana. I can't
remember
the silly name.
Yeah, that we drove down south and got aboard the ship.
Oh, where it was built?
Yeah.
Tuscaloosa.
Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, Alabama. Tuscaloosa.
Okay.
And they let us off in Florida. Had a bus to take us back to our cars.
Okay. So this was a amphibious landing ship that you were on, or was it a carrier?
It was a carrier.
It was a carrier. Okay.
Yeah, but for helicopters.
Okay.
See.
Okay.
So we went on a maiden voyage. Wow. Not far, but we did go.
You couldn't see land.
Wow.
That's far enough for me.
So they invited a lot of the Iwo Jima veterans to
yes.
be on this voyage?
Yes, because the ship was Iwo Jima.
And you had to run of the ship anywhere you wanted to go. I didn't see my husband today. They fed you the GI food. It was good. They fed you twice a day.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all they did on these ships when we were going overseas. You got fed twice a day.
Is that AM enough?
And yeah. So, you know what, we'd get up in the bakery area where they were baking a bread and about 12 midnight, and we'd get bread so we can have some chow.
Steve mentioned there are books we found that we were going to Marine Corps anniversary or something like that, Marine Corps ball or something. They give you these pamphlets to read. You never read them. No. We'd better sit down and read it. It has a picture of Iwo Jima, of a landing on Iwo Jima, and he always said behind him there's this carrier that was sideways, and so he always talked about that. There's that carrier, and I look at it, and I said, that's him, can't be, laying there with his head up in the air looking around.
You were in that picture?
Yeah, I got it at home.
Yeah.
I should have brought it with.
A lot of people gave such a tell that, and what's your head? He said, I was looking what the photographer was doing.
Yeah.
And he's out there. I got copies.
See, I didn't get hit in the head by anybody because I was, we were down below a little mound. So anyway, we went in on the airfield after staying there with these big guns firing at the mountain. And we went straight down the middle. The 3rd Marine Division was on the right, and the 5th Marine Division was on the left, and the 3rd
which I was in, we went down the middle. We got slaughtered. These Japanese had everything all planted and everything. Lost a lot of guys. In fact, who was that, the Medal of Honor winner that was told not to go on Iwo Jima and he got killed? Oh, Christ.
Bradley?
Oh, no, no. Well, anyway, he was told not to go in with the, I think he was with the 4th Marine Division, and son of a gun, he got it. In fact, I just gave the book away, which I didn't read. I gave it to a guy who came over the house to repair our TV, and he said he'll give it back. Oh, Christ. I'll come to it. But anyway, this guy was a genuine hero. I didn't know him, you know.
So he won the Medal of Honor in a previous battle?
Yeah.
But was willing to go back into battle again?
He said he would leave his men, and he stayed, and he fought with his men, and a lot of them were survived because he stayed, and he fought by himself there till the end. I can't think of
it. You know, we lost a tremendous amount of men there, you know. And when they dug, the hole was about as deep as this room and about 1/8 of a mile long, you know. I think we lost 7,000 corpsmen. You know what a corpsman is?
A medical...
Also known as Willie.
Why is it?
We have a friend of ours. He was a corpsman in Korea, and they called him Willie because he didn't want to get shot. If somebody on the opposite side heard him call for the corpsman and that corpsman got up, that's his end.
Okay. So rather than yelling corpsman, they yelled Willie?
Willie, yeah.
Well, it must have worked.
Yeah. So anyway, when the war ended, we were back on Guam. Oh, wait a minute. The 6th Marine Division went in on... they went to war. And we went to take care of the 3rd Marine Division, the 6th Marine Division area. And we walked around in there at night. And, you know, the Japs were coming out after us. But we were lucky. You know, we got them first. But I brought no souvenirs back. You know, didn't want them. I did bring a saber, a junk saber. So you know what I did? When I brought it home, I guarded it with my life, on Guam, and it was a junky thing and all that. And first thing I did, I gave it away.
Yeah.
But living on Guam, after we come back from Iwo was a good life than that. And when the war ended, we were in a movie house, and it's like a big wind coming. That's all the people saying the war. They dropped the bomb, you know, and that's the first time we heard about the bomb.
Did you have much of a celebration when you heard the war was over?
Well, we didn't have no booze or that, if that's what you mean.
No, like booze?
They used to go, the Guamanians would do something with the tree, and it would go into a container. They called it Aggie, and it was a powerful booze. So the guys went into the jungle and they raided them. But I was never a drinker or a smoker. And that's about it. You know how old I am?
I heard you're about 93?
90.
90, okay.
I just turned 90.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Well, you're in great shape for, but hey, that's Marines why. Always stay in shape, don't they?
They do. Yeah. That's my wife.
Let's go back a little bit to the beginning. You mentioned you enlisted in the Marine Corps. How did your parents feel about you doing that?
I don't recall, but they didn't want me to join the Polish Army.
Right.
Well, the Polish Army, when I went over there to the consulate, they said, we're going to send you to Canada and let you learn how to drive a motorcycle and be a messenger and all that. So they were going to come over to the house, and I told my mom. My mom says, in Polish, you know, which I speak the language. And she told me that, no way. She said, if you want to join something in America. So that's when I was 17 years old. I was still at Morton High School, and I joined the Marines. So the next thing you know, they sent me down south. When we were enlisting, there must have been maybe 60 people that enlisted, you know, and because there was no war yet. But, you know, December 7th came around pretty fast. So that's about it.
So then you did your basic training in the Carolinas.
Yeah, North Carolina.
How did you end up becoming a barman?
My size.
Okay.
They gave the bar. I'm not a big guy, but they gave me the bar.
Okay.
But that was not when we were in the States.
Oh, okay.
I got it when I was overseas.
Okay.
And the first thing, when they had a replacement, we lost a lot of officers. And this one guy who became a good friend of mine, he was a lieutenant, and he had us in formation, and we had all our weapons, and he comes up to me, he says, "Damn it," he says, "you're the biggest barman I ever saw." But I did have the bar all through all the campaigns. Okay. It was a terrific weapon, okay. You know. But being on Iwo Jima was bad. We lost too many men, you know. These guys were all in different locations and ready to shoot us, you know, get rid of us. So anyway, we had a preacher, you know, if you're Catholic or whatever nationality are, you know, we had preaching. You want to see a picture of me?
Sure.
He didn't want to bring someone very little.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot to show.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Oh, you ever see one of them?
I haven't. No. Iwo Jima survivor. Okay.
In the Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
I've never seen you do it.
You want it?
Oh, yeah.
So this is you in what, 1941?
46.
Oh, 46, when you got out. Okay.
Yeah. 1946.
It's a handsome fella.
Is there another picture in there? Yeah, that's on Guam.
Guam. Okay.
That's our living quarters, the tents and that. That's me when I come home. Oh, by the way, we got the presidential citation. The 3rd Marine Division did, which is an honor.
It is.
And this is the last day on Iwo Jima. That's me on the left. You see the bar in there.
Oh, yes. That is a big weapon.
That's a big weapon.
It weighed, what, about 20 pounds?
Oh, of course.
And then, plus, you had to carry all those ammunition pouches, too.
I had two guys carry the extra.
Okay.
And, yeah, I'd use them up pretty fast. I was in a couple of battles there. One was the worst one. I'll never forget his name. Lieutenant Glass was up on a little rise like that. And there's two tanks down below. And I was right behind Lieutenant Glass, and he got it. The ammunition, the bullets must have went straight down. And they were just leaving them lay there. I picked them up, took them to the tank, and that blood was just flowing all over me. So I put them on the tank so they can take them, but he didn't make it. He was already gone, I guess. When he was so limp, you know. But anyway, that's me on the right.
On the right.
That's the running automatic rifle.
Yeah, well, you can see it pretty good. Yeah, I didn't get anything special. Just a 1-star, 2 stars for the battles. And Guam was really a place and a half.
Can you tell us more about that?
Guam?
Yes.
Well, Guam had an air, you know, the Air Force moved in over there. And we'd go and visit the Air Force and that on Sundays because the food we were getting from the Marine Corps was lousy. So we'd go there, and one day a lieutenant said, "Hey, you Marines want to take a ride to Okinawa?" You know? Well, God darn it, we got on there, and we're coming in for a landing, and here these Japanese Bettys are coming in bombing the airstrip. So word got that these guys took us to the island there, and anybody who was going to be on board a plane, you know, any more would be court-martialed. So they didn't go. But Guam was quite a place. It was a beautiful island, And we did a lot of training there. And we called it the boondocks, you know, to go in the jungle and all that stuff. And then plus going in the boondocks to find the Japanese who had gone into the jungle to hide from us.
So the main battle had been over, but there's still a lot of Japanese all over the island, just hiding.
In fact, recently they said here one chap had come out and he lived out in the jungle. See, when we come in for the landing, it was by the cemetery, and the big boulders jutting out of the ocean, and we had to go around all of them, and we lost a lot of guys over there too. You can't believe how many we lost. I think it was about 7,000 corpsmen, and you know, a lot of officers got it, you know, had a lot of replacements coming in. 328-504.
Your serial number?
Yeah. You ever seen World War II dog tags?
I haven't, no.
They're different.
What's on there, Ryan?
Let's see. His name? Is that the blood type?
Yeah.
United States Marine Corps.
Now, does it have your faith on there, too?
No.
No?
You know why they got two, don't they?
In case you lose one? Or?
If a guy is dead, they take his dog tag off and put one in his teeth. You ever see one?
I haven't seen that, but I've heard the story of why they have the two. So I always wondered, when you see on the movies, a soldier goes down and someone rips off a dog tag. I never knew if that was true or not, but
yeah, it's
apparently
true.
It is.
It's true. Yeah, I never had the... never had to do it. I wouldn't do it anyway. But, yeah, here's my number. It's 328-504. And the dog tag was given to me much, you know, after boot camp and that. But those were the days.
Now, you mentioned you spent a little bit of time on Guadalcanal.
Not much of a time, maybe
2 days. Or?
2 days, exactly.
Can you tell us much about that when you were there?
No, I was right there on the beach, and the fighting was going on and all that, but away from me. But I can see all the dead chaps from where I was.
They were still, okay.
Oh, they were on the beach everywhere. They did a good job. But I don't remember too much about it, you know. On Guam, the same thing. We didn't care, you know, and we just prepared for another battle. Okay. Good bunch of Marines. Nothing like a Marine. My two brothers were Army. One was with the 101st Airborne, and the other guy was, you know, in Europe too. My brother Harry was something else. He was telling us not much about coming down in parachutes, getting shot out of the sky by the Germans. You know all about that.
Yes, well, that's the whole Band of Brothers TV series.
Yeah, he was something else. So,
now, can you tell us much? You mentioned going from a transport ship into a landing craft to get to the beaches.
Yeah.
Can you tell us that whole process?
Of getting down there?
Yes.
Well, It's more or less, we got on a landing craft, and like I said, the ship was going down, and the landing craft was coming up, and I'm going down the rope ladder with all the other guys, and...
So you're going down a rope ladder with full packs on?
Oh, yeah.
And the ships moving in opposite directions.
And in fact, I still got them at home. I got the sea bag with all the places that I was. I should have brought that.
You should have brought lots of stuff. I don't know why you just brought that. Well, you've got tons of stuff.
You can come back and bring them. We'd love to see them, and maybe we could take photographs of
these
them
guys
too.
Yeah. You've got your original...
My knife.
K-bar.
K-bar.
K-bar. I got the original one at home. It looks like crap.
I was supposed to.
But I use it a lot. But let me tell you something. I was about halfway down the island, and I got separated from my guys, and I felt something whizzing by me, you know. So I jumped into the shell hole, and I could feel, you know, the way they were shooting. Three Japanese, it turned out, shooting there at my feet, you know, trying to hit me. Well, I'm Catholic, and I said a prayer. So anyway, all of a sudden, here comes this tank coming alongside the shell hole, and he had a bulldozer on the back. I never seen a tank with a bulldozer on the back, and he covered the three guys up. So God answered my prayer.
Tell them about your buddy who was in the hole with you.
Huh?
Tell about your buddy who was in the hole with you.
Oh, not them.
Not them?
No.
Tell about them.
And we had some dangerous times, you know.
Tell about him. You remember he was shaking?
Oh, Lou?
Yeah, he never could talk.
Lou, the guy that's on there, on the picture, he was a good friend of mine. We'd stick around together except when I got caught in that shell hole. Anyway, Luke Berkland, who's gone now, deceased, you know, they had a Screamin' Mimi. Did you ever hear the Screamin' Mimi in the Marine Corps?
I've heard the term, but I don't know
what it is. Okay, Screamin' Mimi was the Japanese had it. It's about that big around, and you'd hear it coming. That's why we called it the Screamin' Mimi. So anyway, all of a sudden, one is coming, and Luke jumped into the shell hole, and there's about five guys already in there. I jumped in, and Lou was shaking like that. Yeah. I lost track of him. He got hurt, and I lost track of him. And recently I found out, after all these years, where was he? He was at Heinz Hospital.
Right down the street.
Yeah, because he hurt his back.
His friend who was shaking, when he got up after that, he couldn't talk but a whisper. Ever.
Yeah.
Ever?
Ever.
Yeah,
he was so scared, the
war ended, and I lost track of him because he had gone on the hospital ship, and he went back to the States. So anyway, I lost track of him, and I tried to find Luke Berkland and everything. And then all of a sudden, where my son Kenny buys his Cadillacs in Forest Park, he worked there as a mechanic. And I never knew it.
Oh, wow.
And I found out about Luke Berkland after he had passed away. Oh, cool. Then I went to his wake.
What a shame.
And you know what they said? You're the big Polack he always talked about.
So you're the one.
Yeah. But, you know, when I come home, I'm my greens, that's my uniform. I never owned a set of blues. You know what the blues are?
The dress uniforms.
Yeah. I never had one because they were initiating them out there, or that you could buy them or anything. And I come home from Chicago, and the next day I'm walking in the streets of Cicero, nobody paid attention to me. People passed me up, and not that I wanted them to do that.
No, but
they didn't. But anyway, Luke Berkland was a couple of miles away from me in Forest Park.
Boy, so close and yet so far.
Yeah. Yes, again.
Let's go back to Iwo Jima for a little bit. Can you tell us what it felt like when you saw them raising that first flag?
Well, like I said, I was next to the cannons,
right.
And it didn't mean anything to me. You know, I just saw the first flag being raised, and I saw the guy with the carbine. In fact, I got a picture of him, and I did want to meet him. But the alcohol was a victor.
Didn't you say when the
he's
first
married? He's buried at Queen of Heaven.
The first flag went up. Everybody thought the war was over, and that's why a lot of people didn't look when the big one up. They thought the war.
They never saw that big one.
No, they started celebrating because they thought the war was over.
Oh yeah.
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 You know, they were also disappointed when they didn't know it. You know, maybe some of them really thought they were going up, standing up, waving like. They were up there waving, they get killed. Should be down. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why was the second flag raising done? Do you know why?
Well, I think it was, to my opinion, that photographer. It was the one that decided to put that up. See.
No, that the officer in the ship wanted a big one so everybody could see it.
Oh, they wanted a bigger flag?
Oh, yeah. Did you hear
they
that?
They wanted a bigger flag because Beck, the guys couldn't see it. Like this little flag. So he wanted a bigger flag. And then, like, when they went to take it, two different photographers took it. And they sent one, but the other one come with the one that's famous. They like that one better than the other
one. Yeah, it looked good in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Well, it's a remarkable photo.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, we went down to see it many years ago in Washington.
Oh, the monument?
Yeah. Yes. It's impressive. But if that's what the Marine Corps wanted, that's what they got.
Well, anyway.
The one down below was just a guy putting a flag up. And it was only guys were sitting down so they wouldn't get shot, evidently. And the flag was in their hands,
you
know.
Did you ever see Iwo Jima sand, the real stuff?
That's what I wanted to ask you about.
He does them.
Okay. What was it like fighting on that kind of soil?
Well, you walked on sand, the same thing.
Okay.
That's where it was.
But you get in a hole and start sinking in on you.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because it was...
You couldn't dig in it. That's why we used those shells from the cannon.
Okay.
It's coarse, and like you can't pack it either. You can't pack it. It's like almost like rice.
It's like ground coral, almost, or volcanic.
It was black.
Yeah.
But it's like if you're trying to pack a rice up, you can't. It's just how it's made that consistency. You just keep, they keep just holding it and covered up with it, you know.
All of a sudden, I got inundated with the jars. People were giving that to me.
Jars of Iwo Jima soil?
Yeah. But it was only up to so far, and then it became regular dirt.
Oh, okay, just near the beaches, it was black?
Yeah, by the beach.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, on that picture, you can see my buddies looking, too. But I can identify them, you know.
Okay. Yeah, when you get a chance, you'll have to bring that in so we can make a copy
of
it.
I should have brought that.
And
that's
then
right.
Through all the, we used to work for the third, he was commander of the, when did the first, I forgot, you've been doing so much stuff, that, a lot of the different generals and so forth knew Stan through the years. When they knew they were retiring or they were sick, they sent over and gave us copies of one of the, well, it would be like the original top secret maps and everything, the old planning of it. People have been giving him a lot of stuff like that. I mean, that's irreplaceable, you know.
It's historic.
Yeah, it is. And nobody would, because it was just like a top secret, says top secret on baloney. Because we're looking, I don't understand it, you know, but that's what that was, all the writings and notes on it.
You know what happened? The sergeant major who had interviewed me for, they honored me with a big party on President's,
Marine Corps Ball. That's a few years ago.
So I was
a
main man.
Ago, yeah.
So anyway, the sergeant major who became a very good friend of ours, he came over to the house and he gave me the white hat. He didn't give me the uniform.
Officer's hat, because
he here, Stan. Oh, I knew the guy who won a Medal of Honor with the 4th Marine Division. He was a Chicago fireman. And we had a reunion many years ago, and who's walking down the hall but him, Joe, forget his last name.
McCarthy.
Yeah, McCarthy, Joe McCarthy. He was a fire chief in Chicago before he went to the Marine Corps. And anyway, he's coming down the hall with tons of people over there, and he hollers, Sam, were you with me when he did that?
Yes, I was. You told me.
And so you know what? He gave me a picture of that second,
gold leaf.
Yeah.
In gold leaf.
In gold leaf, yeah. And so I knew Joe. You know, he's a pretty good guy, but he didn't get along with the city of Chicago. They didn't like him.
Stan has a Marine Corps ball. He was a guest speaker downtown, and then they made this here big thing of all the pictures here with all the different everybody.
Oh yeah,
it's huge, you know. And then they've given him so many different things. It's just hard to keep track. You start digging it out of this and this and this. Yeah, he's got lots of things. Then they had a double picture in there. I said, oh, that's not right. So they went and they made, had us come down there and they did a copy of it. I never seen a copy machine. I bet you it's this long. Pick up after. Did you ever see one?
No.
And I said, what is it? He said, that's a new copy machine. Everything they get is a big stuff now. So they got that one, you know. So our house, we got, and Petrie have given us a lot of different pictures, you know, and stuff like that. About them, that too. You know how much you have.
It sounds like you have a regular museum at home.
Could be.
Our daughter was a Marine.
Okay. Yeah. So it runs in the family.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, when the lieutenant came over to the house to pick her up to take her to the airport, he said, sir, what were you in the Marine Corps? I understand you were a...
Barman.
Browning. He didn't say Browning Automatic. He said a barman. He said, did you tend bar in an officer's
mess? Officer's club.
That's honest.
It's true.
Was he kidding or no? He didn't know what a BAR was.
Steve, I said, sir...
Stan couldn't even answer for a minute.
Yeah, he picked the... Cindy's passed already, but she was a Marine. Something else.
He should have been ashamed of himself.
He should have, yeah. Yeah, they picked her up. See, Paris Island. You've heard of Paris Island. That's where I trained. The DIs treated you awful.
Yeah, can you tell us about the basic training that you went through?
The basic training... you had the rifle range that you'd go to, and we had O3 rifles in them days.
The Springfields?
Yeah. Yeah, and then later on when we went to war, they had the M1 Garands.
You know? Except for you.
Yeah, except for me. I got. But anyway, Paris Island was a nice place, and we'd wash our clothes outside on a long thing like this, you know, scrubbing them and everything. But the DIs at that time can do anything they wanted to you. Today, it's not like that, you know. Be careful, you know. You don't mistreat a soldier. And
especially not a Marine.
But, you know, I don't know if you know how proud the Marine Corps is. It's, you know, when a Marine takes his boot camp in California, you know what they call them?
A Hollywood Marine?
Yeah. So if I see one guy, you know, I say, hey, where'd you take your boot? He says, San Diego. He'd know what, then I saw your, you know. Yes. So, but anyway, going aboard the U.S. Rochambeau, it was a rough ride. We had destroyers on each side of us, but we weren't the only ship loaded with troops.
So it was a convoy?
Convoy. But there's a whole bunch of destroyers on each side, and we zigzagged across the ocean.
Against submarines?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that your first time on a ship like that?
Yeah.
Did you get seasick?
No.
No?
No.
I'll bet you a lot of other guys did,
though. We got, that I don't remember. But we got fed twice a day, and that's all. They starved the hell out of us. So we'd get up and go to the bread, I think I mentioned that, and we'd get the bread from the cooks.
Okay.
The eating bread. But, you know, when we come back, to the States after the war ended, there was nobody there greeting us. Nobody. We came off the ship and, you know, went to the tent city. And then from tent city, they sent me on convalescent furlough. I wasn't hurt or anything, but they sent me on convalescent furlough to back home. So when I got home, we were on a train, you know, with coal-burning trains. And it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I took a cab home, and I got in the house and jumped out of my mom's bed. But nothing like a Marine.
Yeah, that must have been quite a homecoming for you.
Yeah, it was.
Did your parents know that you were coming, or
no.
Did you just surprise them?
I just surprised them. You know. In fact, my ma got part of my salary. Yeah. I think I got $10 a month, and the rest went home.
Now, were your brothers back home already by the time you got
home? Yeah, my two brothers were. My brother Harry was with the 101st Airborne,
and he was coming down in the sky getting shot out. And he lucked out, you know, he was able to land, but he saw a lot of his buddies get it. And then my brother John, the older one, he was in Germany and all that, and I didn't see him too much.
They've never talked about, never, the kid
they never talked.
Stan didn't talk about it for years and years even. No, it was just something he didn't talk about. And then he met this one fellow, he had a patch, he always kept it in his drawer. And I said, what is that patch? Oh, I got to keep that patch, it's blah, blah, I'm paying no attention. When he said, well, you put this on my jacket, I said, okay. He said, well, a couple weeks, when you put it on my jacket, I said, okay, I sewed it on. He went to, where'd you go?
I went to Oak Park.
Oak Park, and someone hollered out,
hey, 3rd Marine Division.
And that started him into all the different things he's belonged through the years. And it's wonderful. When you get to know a Marine, believe me, you know a Marine forever.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he was, many, many things he's going to. Sometimes it can't keep track of how much going, but it's all good.
Yes.
You wouldn't want to not be there.
There's a movie that, from the Chicago police, a good friend of ours, because we belong to all that, and they told me, hey, Stan, we got something going, and we'd like you to pick you up. So he come to my house, picked me up, and this cop, he drove down the streets like he was crazy. So we went to this big building with tons of people in there. And I was wondering, what the hell is going on?
I don't know where he was at.
Nobody said nothing to me except that we're going to this place. What was the name of that movie?
Band of Brothers?
Yeah, Band of Brothers.
Did you?
I've seen that.
Anyway, that was not the Marine Corps.
No.
No. So anyway, we get in and people are eating and drinking and that. And then they called me over, the Tribune interviewed me. And then they said, we want you to meet the 3 actors that were in that movie.
The real actors were there.
And I met them. So then I didn't even get to eat. Then they got the movie going because it was first showing in Chicago. So I went, and this whole row, it says for veteran World War II veterans only. So I sat down, there's nobody sitting with me. Then a lady comes on the stage before the movie, and then they started talking about my life.
Oh.
So they gave a hand, and all these cops are up in the bleachers. They had known about it, and they were asked to come and they give me a hand.
What a great surprise.
Yeah, but that movie was not the Marine Corps.
No, your brother would have liked it.
Chicago Police Marines, and they're Marines and they're policemen, and they're still in duty. They're younger guys. He comes home, and I was like 1, 2 o'clock morning, they woke me up, knocking on the door, and they have out drinking, and by that time they drank some too. And they're carrying things in the house. You know how when you go to a big, like a first showing of a movie, you know, of those big cardboards? Yes. They're dragging them, and they took them.
The cop gets them all.
It's like a music. I have the first one, and then they've got where they sign where a couple of the people in the, you know.
Oh, the actors?
Yeah, I don't know if Dominic kept that one, you and I don't know. There was so much going on, and you had the paper of showing what's going to be about.
Yeah.
You had that. There was so much going on sometimes that time of night. I remember I put everything over there. But yeah, but he's got like a museum in the house, really. It is like that, everything. But he doesn't even know what he has because we've gone to so much, he just keeps building up.
Well, it was 12 o'clock already by the time we got out on the street. It was, you know, nice outside. So these guys, the lieutenant colonel was there, a good friend, and he says, hey, let's go and have a beer. So here there's about 6 Marines, you know, in blues and all that. And they're walking down the street, and the cop was walking ahead of me, but I couldn't keep up. These guys were really moving. So the lieutenant colonel come back, and he said, I'll do your cadence. So I was there. So anyway, I get in there, and I didn't have to buy a thing.
And you shouldn't have to either.
No. Oh, that was a good time.
Yeah, they come in that night, pound around the door, carrying stuff for them, and I go, look, we got this on the computer. So we sit at the computer, put this on, oh, this is this, and they're just talking and laughing. I don't know what time, I mean, went to bed, you know, but had all this stuff, and then does Dan try to tell me afterwards, I'm still knocked up from all this drink, always going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of nights like that with him, and the guy getting the guy, they won't let go of you.
I have a question for you. The war ended in, August of 45?
Yeah.
But you didn't get out until 46.
Did I was spend a regular.
That, okay. Did you spend that time overseas or back in the States?
No, I was back in the States. No, no, I was on Guam when the war ended.
Okay.
And I didn't know I signed up for 6 years. You know, being a kid. And I found out I signed up for 6 years, and that's why I didn't get out until April of 46. Okay. Then they said, you go to Great Lakes to get discharged. So I get to Great Lakes, and they say, oh, no, you don't get discharged over here. You got to go to the base in the, oh, Christ, it'll come to me. So I got shipped out there on the coal-burning train, and they said, no, you don't get this out of the Marine Corps here. You got to go back to Great Lakes. So I get back to Great Lakes. They discharge me, and I got
$10. Typical military, right?
Yeah. Oh, boy. It was something. But, you know, I was still a kid, you know. Never smoked, never drank. I still don't.
So how has your time in the service affected your life afterwards?
Oh, I was strict.
Yeah, very strict. Like,
we got, how many kids we got?
Eight. All the family who's ever been in the service come back, the guys think they're, you know, jump when I say jump, do this when I say that. Now, he still tries it.
Always a Marine.
Yeah, it doesn't work very well. I've got used to not, yeah. They carry that with them forever.
They do.
It's built in them. You know, they go on good, but still they got that when they think they should have something. They want. I want it. Where is it? Go get it. But then you kind of like kind of melts down, but still that's behind what he's saying. You know, you know the difference. Yeah. True.
Our son, our youngest son, Ken. Kenny, how old is Ken?
You're
going to be 38. Yeah, Ken had a tremendous job. You know, he was with the company for a long time after high school. And he got laid off. He owns his home.
Business closed.
He owns his own home in Downers Grove, you know, real nice one. So they were going to lose the house. All of a sudden, he got a job he's chief engineer of Trump Towers.
Wow.
He lucked out. See, the person, when he was interviewed, you know, into this one interview, and this lady said, oh, hi, Ken. He didn't know who she was, you know. And he talked like, oh, yeah, he didn't know who she was. And so she gave a good recommendation. So he said that he had worked with her in the other job, but he didn't remember her. Okay. He didn't remember, but she knew him. Yeah, and so he got the recommendation. So he's got a really wonderful job, and wow. He loves it.
Great for him.
He took us for the tour. Up in the very top where that Rose lives, yes. You know, like he's got, and that very, at the second floor, the top one, nobody lives, like $30 million, you know, get it, and then $30 million to furnish it.
And I bought it.
Yeah, we walked and walked and walked and never finished, just finished it, you know, and none, not, there isn't one room, it's not all wall, all glass. Yeah, everything is like inside, you walk around the house all outside, and just like you're up in the clouds.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. We got to go just look at it. But, yeah, there was that.
So he's been there how many years now?
Going on 3.
Wow. Yeah.
Great for him.
He's a good guy.
Yes.
He don't use profanity. He don't smoke. I think he has a drink once in a while.
Oh, he does.
But what the hell?
Good guys finish first?
Yeah. But the funny part is, see, Trump isn't always in town. You know, he's up here, there, this and that. He's always got clothes ordered for something or another he needs, and, you know, when he gets to town. And then you have to be rushing like crazy, clothes fit. Well, it just so happens, Ken and Trump are the same size. So when he gets clothes ordered,
yeah.
Ken had a hard day at work. I had to try on all his clothes, brand new clothes, they fit their adjustments. I think that's a rough life. You know, sometimes. So, anyway, but Stan, when he was, you told me a lot of things you didn't say. I can't try to. Well, how about when you were in that, where the, the hole there, and all the Japanese were coming at you, and they said it was different fourth.
Oh, that's when that tank come and saved
you. Yeah, but you didn't say why they saved you guys. They were in the hole there, and some was hiding.
I was the only one.
Fourth Marine, Fourth Marine coming just so.
I got to tell you about that.
That's scary, yeah.
See, the 4th Marine Division was on the right, the 5th Marine on the left, and sometime during the campaign, the 4th Marine Division was called back, and they went to Hawaii. So it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I just got off guard duty, and the sergeant took my place, and all of a sudden I heard him say, "Who goes there?" And some guy says, "Supplies for the 4th Marine Division." He threw a flare. There must have been 40 or 50 Japanese, and there must have been 40 to 50 laying on the ground when we finished off.
We would have got slaughtered.
That's when they come and just cover them all up. That's how come they cover them up.
Yeah. We got them all in the night, you know, if not for that
He knew.
Sergeant, he hollers, you know, "Who goes there?" Surprise for the 4th Marine Division.
And so they said it without any kind of accent?
None at all. It was perfect. I heard them. You know, I still hear them.
You knew a lot of them were college graduates from the United States. The Japanese had come over as exchange students. They went back and they knew everything because they had lived here for a while.
You know, I've been going to Heinz. And about a year ago, I got a new doctor. Japanese. American born.
So what does Stan tell them about when he was fighting over there against the Japanese? I said, how could you?
I don't have him now. He told us a week ago that he's leaving the Heinz, that he's going to go in a different profession, right?
Cardiology, he said, yeah.
I was going to say something to him. You're American born, and we did a lot to your country, but I didn't know what to say.
Yeah, and it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I think he didn't have to tell him that, but he did.
Didn't have to. I was very, I don't know how you say it. I felt, jacket, I've got the Marine Corps emblem. I turned it inside out.
You felt embarrassed when you first met him.
It was embarrassing. You know, the war is over, and he was a guy smaller than you. I couldn't believe it, right, Mom?
Yeah, he looked like a 16-year-old.
He didn't, when he examined me, all he did was look at the screen, and he wouldn't even look at me. Right, Mom?
Good thing I
did. So he told us, that was last week, that he's going into another profession. So he was a nice guy.
He was a nice guy. I think he was kind of embarrassed.
But Heinz is not what people think. You know, when you come in, you got an appointment for 1 o'clock, forget it. You're there at 1:30, 2 o'clock, you're still waiting in the room. And then, I went there about something to the emergency room, and they sent me over to get an x-ray. And they put me, they said, get on the table. And there was a second person in there. And I had to go round and round, maybe a dozen times.
This is funny. He's never been sick ever in his life. Really, never ever been sick. They wanted to take a CAT scan. You know, have you ever been had one? It's he comes out. He's hollering. Oh, what they did to me! We're all laughing because we all have had.
I could have fallen off that table. I was turning, and it turned out she was teaching the young lady there.
And see, you're. Everybody's had one but you, and you have never had this experience. You're so lucky. And you still can't get over it.
So I went, they said, okay, you can go back to your room.
Like you're being ground up.
I didn't even get into the room, and here comes the doctor. He said, nothing wrong with you. So here I turn around to go out, and here comes the nurse running. Sir, here's your aspirin.
Aspirin.
They gave me an aspirin.
He's been so lucky. He's never had any sickness or anything wrong with him. When he has something so dramatic.
Yeah, I've been. God was on my side. As I come out, here I am.
Anyway.
I work hard, you know, and that.
Anyway. I have a question for you about being a barman. What makes you different then from being a rifleman? What were your responsibilities as a barman?
I was the lead guy, and I was the powerhouse. I can fire them just like a machine gun, you know, pull the trigger on it and everything. So I was more or less the lead man, you know, head of the troops that had regular rifles.
Okay. So you were, you'd be leading your
Man, God, I was lucky, you know.
And you came through without a scratch.
No, not a scratch. Yeah.
So I've got kind of an odd question for you. You've given us a pretty good description of what battles are like. What did it sound like to be in battle?
I'll tell you what, I really never felt any different.
He always said it was so deafening. Everything was deafening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He said his ears sometimes afterwards he couldn't hear. You know, it's too loud. And he always had to adjust. He's always said that, you know.
They had the Japanese had a bazooka that would fire, and it would sound like a woman crying. And we seen that, you know. It was, boy, it had a mouth like this. So it was Screaming Mimi, we called them. And that's it. But as far as, you know, I guess I was too young to care, you know. I didn't care whether about anything except just fighting, that's all. Because I had a real good bunch of guys. Real good. Yeah.
So... any other stories you'd like to share with us today? Any other final thoughts?
When the war ended, we heard, we were at a movie house on Guam, and all of a sudden, it like a big wind coming toward us. They said they dropped the bomb on Japan. And the same thing happened when the war ended. We're in a movie house again, you know, it was outside, and all of a sudden on Guam, it came rushing towards us, all the voices, and they said the war was over. But let me tell you something. I was a sergeant, and I went in a boondocks with my men to search for Japanese who were hiding in there. And it was hot, and the war was over already. So, because they're still, they were in there in the boondocks for a long time. And we come back, I had six guys with me, and we had a thing that was about this big, and it was ice cream in there. So Samuels, Sergeant Major Samuels, I still remember him. He closed that thing when we were coming in. We were maybe a... 25 feet away, and he closed it and put the lock on it. I said, Sergeant Major, I said, you know, we can use ice cream. And he said something to me, which I can't repeat here. So you know what, I went like this to him, I hit him on the shoulder, and I became a PFC.
He had it coming.
So anyway, I see he died. You know, I see his name in the paper, in the magazine, Samuels. He was something else. He thought he was a big wheel, being a sergeant major. You know, sergeant majors are something special.
You know, I have a question. You mentioned about going after these Japanese stragglers in Guam. Now, did they not know the war was over, or did they? Were they just refusing to surrender?
Oh, no, this was during the war.
Oh, okay.
During the war. Okay. But after the war, they were still out in the jungle. They were still looking for them.
Okay.
But we were there in the jungle, you know, while we were there, because they were the troops that we kicked off the island.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
So. But other than that, they... Oh, okay, we ended up on Iwo Jima, and we're going past the prisoners. There must have been about a dozen. And one guy hollers at me. He says,
"Hey, man, have you got a cigarette for me?" He spoke perfect English. I fooled you that.
Did you give him one?
I don't smoke.
Sorry. You know, that picture of me and Luke Birkeland, I didn't take a wash or anything for the whole battle.
He can't remember ever washing and take a shower, changing clothes.
How long was that?
About 35 days.
Wow. Because he had to do something because he don't remember.
So we got aboard ship and they let us use regular water to take a shower.
Okay. That must have been a treat.
That was a treat because the salt.
Yeah, no salt water.
No. Yeah. So that's why, man. Oh, we did have a Catholic priest on the island. We went to Mass, you know, during the combat, too.
Oh, even during combat?
Yeah. Yeah.
How would you hold the services? Would you just go into the rear area?
It was about halfway, you know, the battle. And it was a ridge that was up above, and the pastor was up on the ridge in that. And then there's a good friend of mine, he was a sergeant too, and we just left one of the cannons that had been shattered by our you know, whatever they use to shatter the cannons in it. Anyway, he's up ahead, and I'm maybe about 20 feet behind him, and he stepped on a mine, like, and his helmet went, he didn't get hurt, his helmet went flying way up in the air. But the worst part was, I was by a command post and I was trying to catch up with my guys, and there was a Japanese tank with an American underneath the tank, and he, you know what he was saying? He was saying "Mama."
Well, he
kept repeating that. I can never forget that. I didn't help him because you know, I was trying to catch up with my men. He kept on saying, I remember that so much. Those Japanese were something special, you know. I never went into their tank, down in after them or anything. Everything was above ground. See.
But did some other Americans have to go down into the tunnels, or no?
They didn't go in.
They didn't go in at all?
No, they would use the flamethrowers. That's yours.
Oh no, you can keep
it. You don't want it?
Oh, well, we'll add it to your record here. There. Yes. Well, thank you. Boy. Yeah. This is great. Well, thank you. Yeah. Did I share that?
No, I don't think it's everything is.
Yeah, I didn't see that flag.
Where'd you get that at?
I've had it for years.
Okay.
Well, we'll put it on display with your
nice
record. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Nice.
Anything else you'd like to share with us today, or?
One thing I'd like to share with you, you know, one's a Marine, always a Marine, and they're the best people in the world. In them days, we didn't swear. No swearing. Today, everybody's swearing in the Marine Corps.
Except in our meetings, it's mostly 99% men. They don't swear.
Oh, yeah, we belong to the Chicago unit.
They don't swear.
Even the younger ones? They don't?
No. I go stand all the time, maybe one or two other women, the rest are all men. But they do not swear. And when they have their fundraiser, maybe when they get toward dinner, they go, they kind of blast out. But it's not bad words. I mean, I'll swear, but it's not, you know, dirty talk or nothing.
They, I'm the head guy in a police car when they have a parade downtown.
Okay.
You know, and the cop, see, we have 90% of them are police. We have meetings once a month in the FOP building. That's the Chicago Police and that. So I was at a party the other day. And one lieutenant was retiring, and they had a ton of people in that building. Corned beef and cabbage. And the good people. They introduced, he got up and he's talking, and he started, he called names off, and he called mine first.
and identified me and where I had fought. But he also talked about other men that were in the war now, you know, which it was a bad war.
Yes.
See, I knew who the hell I was going to shoot. These people wear kimonos, and you don't know who they are.
Right.
It's terrible.
Yes.
So, I figured, you don't mind, do you, Mike?
No, no.
I want you to have that.
Yes.
If you wouldn't have wanted it, I'd give it to him.
No,
you have a nice library.
Oh, ours, thanks.
I would look for proposals. Ours is small to yours.
Is it? Okay, I haven't seen it yet.
No, I volunteer. Okay. I'm there today. Here, we have our book sale tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, because
come from there. So.
We're thinking this Veterans Day in November of creating a photo exhibit showing all the veterans that we've interviewed for this project. So if you don't mind, we'll put up your photo on the wall.
Did you interview
put this black
a lot of Marines?
You're the first, I think, the first World War II Marine.
Uh-huh.
We've interviewed Marines from Vietnam.
Oh, that is a bad war.
Yeah, but you're the first one from World War II that we spoke of.
You ought to have some World War II shirt on or something.
Or if he wants to put his jacket on, we'll
take
that
picture.
Oh, yeah,
put your jacket on yourself.
Okay.
I'll get the camera.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's
I got the jacket here.
Okay. You've got it.
Okay.
That's nice.
Well, thank you so much.
Do whatever you want with it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your memories with us today. It was a great
interview. I hope I won't do this. I didn't want to fill that out.
Oh, no. You do that. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Nothing in the front. Hold your